from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. At 10:30, San Francisco soul and funk band Conbrio will join us in the studio for a live performance. The group, led by frontman Zeke McCarter, will play songs off its album Paradise. But first, we'll be talking to playwright and musician Hershey Felder, whose new one-man show chronicles the life and works of the great composer Beethoven. It's all coming up next, after this news. Welcome to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Musician and playwright and producer and author Hershey Felder has crafted a unique career performing one-man stage biographies in which he acts, sings, and plays piano as a virtuosic composers like Chopin or Gershwin. He has a newly revised show in which he chronicles the life of the musical giant Ludwig van Beethoven from the perspective of a doctor who, as a boy, accompanied the maestro in his final years. Hirschfelder joins us to talk about the show and about how he approaches playing some of the music's greatest composers. And welcome to the program, Hirschfelder.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you for having me.
Delighted to have you. I should mention, by the way, I was introduced to Hirschfelder by our mutual friend Narcy David, and I was culturally deprived. I had no idea about you. I mean, I'd heard things here and then because there's been a lot of buzz about your work. But I went to see a performance of Irving Berlin at the Berkeley Repertory Theater, which was superb. It's the only word that really fits. And then I went to see Beethoven over the weekend at Theater Works down in San Jose in Silicon Valley. And, you know, what I'm struck by, I mean, so many things about your work, but the versatility to go from Berlin to Beethoven just in itself, you know, it's a quantum jump in many ways musically.
Well, it's entirely a quantum jump and an approach to character as well storytelling. But one of the things that has been interesting in this process of all these composers, it's not the only thing I do, of course, but years ago when I did Gershwin and everybody laughed and said, oh, this kind of thing will never work, and then it did, and then became a cottage industry. Suddenly I found myself doing this. And, you know, if the public wants it, you got to give it to them. You know that.
Could I just add over 4,500 performances now and counting without one missed?
Except the one last Thursday night.
With the drone?
With the drone.
Oh, yeah. I tried to explain what happened. There was a drone that hit and all the lights went out. And Hirsch brilliantly took over and did a sing-along, right?
Well, I did. Yeah, I played some raps. No, I basically asked the audience. I said, okay, we have time now. I walked onto the stage as this is going on and said, you'd think in Silicon Valley they'd figure out the technical means of it, but apparently not. So this dude was playing with a drone outside, and he flew the drone into a transformer. The whole entire place blew up. 1,600 homes lost power, including the theater. And we had a full house, 600 people there. And I said, let me entertain you. The problem was that we had lights for only 20 minutes. So I only had 15 minutes of entertainment before they had to run around with their cell phones to try and find their vehicles. So as all this is going on, I took questions from the audience. I said, let me do something while we figure out what happened. And lady said, I never saw your Gershwin show. So I said, okay, I'll play the Rhapsody. And we sang a little bit. We sang God Bless America, you know, just because.
So you have the record for a Canadian singing God Bless America the most times. But on the other hand, Irving Berlin probably has a record being a Jew singing White Christmas or Easter Parade, both of which he composed.
Yeah. Well, definitely. And, you know, I mean, sort of we always talk about this in Walls, you know, if you stop people from coming in, what would the Catholics sing on the holidays, you know, in Berlin? You know, he was so prolific. But you asked about quantum leaps. Well, I think you spend your life learning as much as you can and learning how to do this. And I've been fortunate enough to have the venues and the interest in doing this. So it has been a lifelong process in trying to understand how to switch very quickly. And now there's this big movement to get me to do this in New York on Broadway, to do a bunch of them at once.
Like a montage of them?
Well, no, in rep. So that means one show, every show it changes. And people say, how are you going to do that? I say, well, I just look at the color of the costume and I proceed. And that's literally what happens at this point.
But you occupy these composers. I mean, and we're talking about not only Gershwin and Berlin and Beethoven, but Tchaikovsky and Liszt. And
Bernstein. Yeah.
Bernstein, the list goes on. And it's also, from what I've been reading, you're involved in designing sets and costumes, obviously doing the writing. I know you restore villas too, but this is a lot of versatility that we're talking about here. Is there any composer you felt particularly affinity with?
The one I'm playing when I'm playing him. Yeah. You know, I don't think you can do a... I will say, and I said this, Bernstein's a complicated character. I don't particularly have an affinity for him as a person. And yet when playing the character, you have to be in love with the character. Otherwise, it just doesn't work. I mean, you don't want to be on stage and, well, I don't really like this guy, you know, because the audience won't as well. You have to give every character a chance. You have to invest completely in them while you're doing them.
And I see you as Bernstein. I've just seen this on YouTube, and I know YouTube is your big mentor now in terms of a lot of your research.
You can learn anything on YouTube. You meet the greatest artists on YouTube.
So. But you become, you even get his mannerisms and so forth, and then you sit down and you play without any sheet music at all. You know, it's all played eidetically, or I know you rehearse a hell of a lot, but you know it's really an extraordinary performance.
Well, you're kind, but and generous, but what it really is a lifetime of work, and commitment, and understanding that you know this is what I do, and it's not the only thing I do. I compose and I direct, and as you have talked about, design and do all these things as well. But
produced a big hit here at the Berkeley Rep, the pianist of. Williston.
Pianist of Williston Lane, yeah.
Mona Golubac, yeah.
Yeah, and I wrote and directed that piece and designed it as well. It's just spending a life doing art and telling stories. It's, you know, people come. It was wonderful last night. I had a gathering of donors who I was doing a benefit for one of the theaters, and they asked, you know, these accomplished individuals, these people who have changed Silicon Valley, who have changed the world with their, and they say, we look at you, how do you do what you do? I said, you've got to be kidding, come on. You know, surgeons look at me, how do you do what you do? I said, you've got to be kidding, come on.
You know my response to it, I hear that is? Mm. The question is not how anymore, it's why. And I think, you know, people, I wouldn't put myself in your category by any means, that would be pipe dreaming, but we're driven in many respects, aren't we? You're driven.
Driven, yes. I mean, you know, people ask me, why do I do this? Well, you know, the answer is very simply, we all have a mortgage and the mortgage has to be paid and we have to work. But yes, driven. But it's there's a difference between being driven and ambitious. And you know, one has to know the parameters of what one's doing. Really what it is for me, I think what it is now is there are stories to tell, and if I and sharing with the audience, and I think one feeds the other. If the audience is interested in the stories you have to tell, you feel responsible to the audience, and you want to tell them your stories, or the stories of these great composers. Change the world a little bit, make it a little bit of a better place. You know, real life is so complicated that 2 hours in the theater, if it can bring anybody a little bit of feeling or joy or music, it's what the great artists did all along. I don't fancy myself a great artist. I fancy myself a working one. And that's what a person needs to do, to work. It's what we need. It's what makes us human. We get to work. We make choices. We do. It's not magic.
Work and love, Freud said, the two things that one needs for happiness. And you have...
And cheesecake. Let's not forget
cheesecake
that
helps, yeah.
Cheesecake is really good.
Well, not when you're diabetic. Like, you have to avoid it at all costs.
Oh, I'm so sorry
it's hard.
To hear.
Yeah. But, you know, speaking about love, I mean, here you've had this marriage to the only woman who was Prime Minister of Canada, Kim Campbell, who I interviewed many years ago, Sterling woman, and a woman, how many years older? We think of Macron in France now. How much older?
Are you kidding? They wipe us off the map. I mean, seriously, they're like 25 years between them. This is only 20 and a bit.
Oh, I'm
you
sorry.
Know. Yeah, but you know, but if you think of, but if you think of your current president at this point, the difference is wider. You know, so I mean, it's.
I think of our current president. I should mention that Hirschfelder actually babysat
Tiffany
Trump.
I lived in, well, with his mother-in-law, Marla Maples. We used to play outside in front of Trump Tower because I lived in the same building. I mean, this is a story one forgets, maybe better off forgotten. But, you know, the truth is that I lived in that building when I was studying in New York, and he was renovating where he lives now. And this is a great story. And, you know, I'm short. I'm 5'10½", you know. And I have a Jewish way about me, you know. And when I'm not playing characters, German characters. So I kvetch a little bit, you know. I'm coming down in an elevator. And he is going up in the elevator because he's living there. And he's there with Marla. And they're both enormous. And I'm short. So the door comes wide open. Say, ah, a welcoming committee. And I see these two people looking down at me. Where did this alien come from? That was my encounter and experience. And then his mother-in-law used to play with Tiffany outside. She was a baby. She was a kid. So I used to play with them and entertain and talk. But it was a long time ago.
Talking with Hirschfelder. And I want to remind you that he will be playing Beethoven. He'll be, actually, it's his new play. It's not only playing Beethoven, but actually playing a doctor who, as a boy, accompanied the maestro in his final years. He takes on a number of voices, including Beethoven's. And it's going to run through July 9th. It's actually been extended at TheaterWorks in Silicon Valley. I'm a little bit shy in doing this with you, but can you give us a little bit of one of your voices, a Beethoven voice? Or the Beethoven voice is just so commanding.
Beethoven voice, you know. Herr Stefan, right? You know, because of course, at this point, at the time, I'll move away from the mic a little bit so I don't scare everybody. But at the time where we meet Beethoven, it's 2 years before the end of his life.
He was completely deaf, and he was screaming a lot with a very German accent, you know.
Von Breuning is he's Viennese, and he's a little bit more modern, and he speaks with a Viennese accent. But, you know, between Breuning
and Herr Beethoven, who meets everybody and talks like this,
it's a very interesting character, and it requires physical work to do that. And very different from Berlin, who speaks with a very high sort of New York kind of, you know, and Bernstein, who speaks like this and can die. But you find these characters over the years. You know your mechanism. And so I think you asked before how and why. You know, you learn your techniques, you learn your mechanisms, and then you work every single day of your life so that when you need your technical abilities, you can call on them.
But I told you after I saw you do Berlin, you even had – Berlin was a centenarian. He was like 101 or something. You even had the face of an old man. I don't know how you do that to your countenance.
That's an interesting thing, and that I've learned. Remember, it's all an illusion. So there's no makeup added because he starts at 100 and he goes back to his – I tell the story in – from the time he's a kid and then grow old to being 100 again. Eventually what happens is you loosen your muscles on your face and you drop your face a little bit and, you know, as Irving Berlin at the end, he gets all crotchety and so on. You just drop everything. And it's not...
Hated
I'm doing
Elvis.
Yeah, and then he has Elvis in there as well. I'm doing this in front of you. It's really just an illusion. It's just a suggestion. But if the story is good and the story is really creating the character, generally audiences will buy in. And people say, my goodness, how did you age? You didn't touch makeup. I said, you don't. It's just an illusion. And what that illusion is based on is choosing all the very definitive little pieces that create the illusion and making sure they all work together and then just doing them. But
it's also great acting, though. Let me at least say that and put that in here. We're talking with Hirschfelder, and he's going to be with us till 10:30. Then we're going to talk with members of the very hot band Con Brio. But now
I
we're
heard
talking,
them rehearsing. They're great.
Aren't they good?
Oh, they're fabulous.
Now we're talking about Beethoven, though, and we do welcome your calls.
It's just early Con Brio. That's it.
There you go. toll-free number is available if you've heard Hirschfelder, if you have follow his career, or for that matter, simply had the good fortune of watching him perform in any of the shows he's done over the years. Let's hear from you. Our toll-free number is available if you have a question or a comment from him. And I ought to mention that you go to see Beethoven and you learn a lot about Beethoven, even for some of you who are aficionados about Beethoven. I learned about Beethoven's father and his brothers and the relationship he had with Mozart. And there's a lot that's packed in. There's a lot of research, prodigious research, that goes into these performances as well as, you know, extraordinary performances. Our toll-free number is available, and you can join us, and now would be the time, because we'll be with Hirsch only till 10:30. 866-733-6786 is the number for your calls. Again, you can join us now, and we welcome your calls at 866-733-6786. There's also a number of other ways you can communicate and join us. You can email us, forum@kqed.org, or go right to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on the segment and post any questions or comments you might have that way, or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQED Forum. And I was just thinking about you leading a sing-along when the drone hit and the lights went out and so forth. You know, it brought me back in my own memory to Mitch Miller. Remember Mitch Miller?
Do I remember him? No.
No, you don't remember. You don't have to remember him personally. But, you know, that idea of getting people actually engaged with music by just singing along, it's a wonderful thing to do, and it becomes almost choral and uplifting, doesn't it?
Well, what's interesting, and I've done this, was I totally started by accident on Broadway playing George Gershwin alone. I started to play Summertime, and some woman from the balcony started to sing. I thought, okay, I guess they want to sing. So as an encore, I started to do these singing with the audience. But the real reason was it was in the tradition that George Gershwin would do. He would go to these parties after the shows on Park Avenue or wherever he was, and he would sit at the piano until all hours of the night. He'd play, and all the guests would stand around and sing. And we know of this tradition. And, you know, even today when you get the kids together, they sing Broadway musicals or they're singing whatever the modern... And if you learn the repertoire, it's a lot of fun to go to a kid's party, you know, a tween's party or 20 years old and play the music that they know and they're sort of mesmerized. How does an old dude know that stuff? But they all want to stand around and sing. It's a natural thing. It's a real wonderful way to communicate, but also to bring people together. And what's amazing is put 600, 1,000, I've done it with even 13,000 people at Ravinia in Chicago, put them together and get them singing a song that they all recognize. Something magical happens. Everybody suddenly becomes friends. The world becomes a better place for those few minutes, and it's a remarkable thing to experience.
And when you were talking about tradition just a moment ago, and you said, so he sang, I said, okay, you know, almost sounds, the locution reminds me, I know you had some training in the Yiddish theater in Montreal. I mean, you have a similar pedigree, well, not from family, but Yiddish theater are the roots also of Michael Tilson Thomas, symphony conductor in San Francisco. But that was a big impact on you, wasn't it?
Well, you know, I think the large impact was growing up in a post-Holocaust environment in Montreal, because, you know, when America closed its doors, and some part of the family made it here. But my father's part of the family had to go to Canada and opened a business there, a foods business there. And most of what I grew up hearing was, you know, post-Holocaust survivor, actual survivor, Holocaust survivor, Yiddish at home. And it was like a shtetl with washing machines. That's what I grew up in Montreal. Everybody spoke with an accent. But what it offered me was, it's the go-to place for comedy, of course. And one has to be very dangerous because, you know, Chopin was Polish and Liszt was German-Hungarian. Well, he was Hungarian, but he didn't speak a word of Hungarian. He was German. And Beethoven, I mean... One can't do a Beethoven via Mel Brooks. You have to do a real. So there is a big danger of trying to do comedy. So I have to really temper that. But of course, the go-to place is Borscht Belt, you know, which is what I grew up with. We went to the Catskills.
The last is of the past now. Has disappeared. I mean, it still permeates a lot, but. I got some callers want to talk with you or respond. Anita is first up. Anita, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hi. Good morning. I'm overwhelmed to be able to talk to Hershey Felder.
Oh, that's very dear.
I saw you on Wednesday, and it was really, really wonderful. And I had a question about your script, because it's so easy that you could just decide to do Beethoven, you know, as a little boy, then do him as a middle-aged man, and then do him as an old man. But you chose to kind of jump back and forth in time, and you chose different characters. So it was fairly complex, and yet it was easy to follow, too.
Mm-hmm.
So I was interested in your process.
In the process of that. Well,
yeah, these
things always take a great deal of structuring, and they don't always emerge the first time when you do them. I did a version of this years ago that had similar qualities, but it didn't treat Beethoven as a youngster. And I thought one of the interesting things that I find about Beethoven is that the relationship with his father was so interesting, in that his father was a monster. He was a drunk, as I say, and a failed musician. And he had this habit of beating Beethoven in the head, you know, hitting him regularly when Beethoven didn't behave, but didn't play well, didn't practice, wanted to be a kid. My instinct is that led to, you know, perhaps the onset of deafness. It's hard to know. Nobody really knows. Nobody can determine what it is. But that was a starting point of telling this story in that way. And one of the interesting things about narratives is telling it chronologically offers, it's a story. But in this case, because we're looking at creating the essence of a man, telling bits and pieces of what made the man in various degrees, whether it's from the doctor's perspective or Beethoven's own perspective, and then having the audience piece it together is very much so in the form of one of his sonatas. You have themes and you have elements. The script is actually structured exactly as the first movement of the Sonata Pathétique, which is essentially the movement that created a change in music.
It's a brilliant way to orchestrate the narrative, but you also have the frame, which, mm-hmm. I mean, you know, you use Dr. von Breuning to provide sort of the catalyst for the story. And even with the Irving Berlin show, you know, the frame is he's talking to someone, he's narrating, he's telling his story and so forth. And mm-hmm. that gives you the jump on the narrative. I'm going to jump on another caller here and bring Nancy on. Nancy, go ahead.
Hi, Mr. Felder. I've seen all your performances in Berkeley, and I'm really sorry that the Beethoven is not going to be in Berkeley, or at least in the East Bay. But
it's not that far a schlep.
Oh, it's a schlep. Especially if you're, you know, older. Anyways, I have just enjoyed it so much.
Thank you so much. Very kind.
When you get everybody singing, it kind of reminds me a little bit of, well, you're the classical Pete Seeger.
Oh, that's very nice. Thank you very much.
It's great.
Thank you, Nancy. Good to hear from you. And actually, Ben wants to know, after living in these artists, do you feel like you have a deeper understanding of what pushes artists to greatness?
That's a great question, Ben. One of the things I always answer when people ask me about living in the shoes of these artists, what I've learned myself, and I my standard answer, and totally the truth, is that I am definitely not a genius. But what pushes these artists, I think what's fascinating to me is trying to go back in time before that first run of the Rhapsody in Blue, trying to go back in time before the first chord of the Pathétique Sonata of Beethoven, trying to go back in time and understand what one of those first unusual, very Polish-influenced chords of Chopin was. Where do these artists come up? Where do they hear this? And where does it come from? And that's the eternal mystery. You know, we can analyze in hindsight how these pieces came together and what the harmonies were used and so on to create. But in essence, the understanding of what drove them, I think, is a similar to what anybody who wants to work telling stories. And if I understand anything, that was this desperate need of these artists to get out of what they had inside, to bring out what was inside. It's not for attention. I don't think anybody does this for attention.
You don't say, I mean, you're modest and say that you don't like the mantle of being called a genius, but
not at all.
What you do is similar. It's inside of you and you have to get it out, isn't it?
Well, you know, I work hard at doing it, and it is inside. But what I think drives the whole thing is communicating with the audience, a sense of communication. I think some of the things that we have lost is we're often entertained, but communicated with, to me, is a very important thing, to be able to talk to somebody. And people say, how do you do what you do? I say, well, I get up on stage and I just talk to people. Yeah, but it looks so easy. I said, it's taken an entire lifetime to figure out how to do that.
Well, extraordinary performance as Beethoven and as Irving Berlin. I expect to see a lot more Hershey Felder and hope that you will grace us with more productions here in the Bay Area. Thank you so much for joining us. Beethoven is going to be running through July 9th at Theater Works Silicon Valley. Thank you, Hershey.
Thank you, Michael.
When we return, Con Brio. Stay tuned for that. I'm Michael Krasny.